Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is with great pleasure that we come to be with you today and to the next few days that we're together. At the same time, I appreciate very much the invitation extended to us by the elders here and your reception of us to be here in the few days that we're together. Some of you that we have, as I mentioned in our Bible class, that we have seen before and been here. I have, I should say. Diane said, "Who are those people there?" And I said, "Well, you may know this one and this one and this one, but after that, I can't tell you because I don't remember." But I'm going to hopefully regain a better understanding of who you are. And some of you that I've not seen before and been with, we hope to get to meet you and to be with you. I know our time is going to be very short, so we got to make all the best that we can of it while we're here. While we're here, we're going to see what we can do to learn about a few things. Well, excuse me, I'm not even ready. I am. My mistake. That's my mistake. I must tell you that what we're going to talk about this week pertains to a lot of things regarding marriage. And those things regarding marriage began with our Bible class this morning. And that is, could your marriage be in trouble? At this point in time, we're going to begin in Genesis chapter 2, verse 18 to verse 25, and talk about the idea of the image of God in marriage. Then, Lord willing, tonight, we will talk about, or this late this afternoon, I should say, we'll talk about the idea of the number one intimacy in marriage. The idea of oneness in marriage will be our subject on Monday evening, Lord willing, and then on Tuesday evening, we'll talk about a focused marriage in a busy world, and then on Wednesday night, how to protect your marriage. Some of you may have family members or friends that you know, not necessarily maybe they're troubled in their marriage, but you know it might be good for them to hear these messages, then I would encourage you to bring them with you, invite them to come. If these messages are in some way taped or recorded in some way, you might want to present them to them at some point in time a little bit later. Maybe more so for anything is for your own personal reference. I hope it will be valuable to you. The subject that we will cover this morning, as I said, is the book of Genesis chapter 2, verse 18 to verse 25. So if you will, read with me as we discuss this. A familiar passage to you, it says, "And Jehovah God said, it is not good that the man should be alone. I will make a helpmeet for him. And out of the ground Jehovah God formed every beast of the field and every bird of the heaven, and brought them into the hand the man to see what he would call them, and whatsoever the man called every living creature, that was the name thereof. And the man gave names to the cattle, to the birds of the heaven, to every beast of the field, but for man there was not found a helpmeet for him. And Jehovah God caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man, and he slept. And he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh thereof, and the rib which Jehovah God had taken from the man made he a woman, and brought her unto the man. And the man said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they shall be one flesh. And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed." Talking about a subject like marriage is very heartwarming to some. To some, it's a very disturbing subject. It is a very much needed subject because of the things that we'll talk about at the end of this lesson this morning, and I think the impact of that you will understand very clearly after we discuss these things this morning. I do want you to understand that we're not going to necessarily resolve every marriage dilemma in the next few days. We may not necessarily come to the point that we're going to resolve everything regarding maybe a dilemma that you're having and maybe the trouble that you have in your marriage or somebody that you know. Not all the answers are necessarily confined in just a few messages. There's a lot of work. There's a lot of time that needs to be put into it. You don't become to be married for 30 years just because you just said I do in one day. Even at the point of being married for 5 years, you just can't come to the point of saying, well, we didn't do a whole lot to get to this point. Yeah, you did. You had a whole lot to do. A whole lot of time and a whole lot of work went into that. So give yourself a little bit of credit to where you are today. But yet, if you are where you are today, do you appreciate that as much as you should? Do you think that the way you are now, you think that the next 10 years will hold the same? Would it be different? Would it be any better? Or could it be worse? Many times when we talk about a subject like this, one of the things that I want you to just ask yourself and question is just like the State of the Union address that the President gives at the beginning of every year. What's the state of your union, your marital union? Where does it stand? Do you know what kind of changes need to be made? Do you think the way things are the way they ought to be? Do you think it could be different or it could be better? Usually when you talk about a subject like this, a lot of times when you hear these messages and there are certain points about these messages, usually a husband will think, ah, that's exactly what my wife needs. And then some people, the wives in particular, they'll hear that and they'll say, oh, that's exactly what my husband needs. And in some cases you're thinking, well, I sure hope that makes him better, or I sure hope that makes her better. But please understand that this is not about them, this is about you. Because you can't change your husband. And you cannot change your wife. And you're thinking, oh man, I'm so disappointed. I'm so disappointed. I thought surely I could do that. No, that's not going to happen. Therefore, all these things that we discuss, please understand the value of what it can do to change you. Now, as a result of that, it's going to make some difference in the life of your husband, the life of your wife as well. Especially if they give great regard and respect and love and consideration to your relationship in your marriage, they're going to take what you're doing as evidence of the fact that you're trying to be more so, as we talk about this a little bit later, you're wanting to be what God wants you to be, not just what they want you to be. And that's very crucial, very important that you understand that very fact this morning. But please think about this. And all the things that you may use to describe your marriage, like I mentioned in our Bible class this morning, if it's good, if it's bad, if it's stressed, if it's tense, if it's conflict, if it's not the way that you think it ought to be, you wish it were better, what would you do if you knew the state of your union is the way that it is today, you knew there were some mistakes that you made in the past? Would you do anything at all to admit what's gone on in the past? May it have something to do with you? And would you be willing to do everything you could to resolve it? Would you want to bring it to the point of being better? Would you want to see it grow? Would you want to see the intimacy greatly find itself deeply seated within the hearts of both you and your husband or you and your wife? What would you do? Would you know that there's some mistakes that need to be made? Maybe as bad as they were in the past, do you know that there's something that could be done differently than the way things are being done right now? As we get into this morning, I want you to think about something. Sometimes you may think that this lesson is just for the younger couples that have been married for, let's say, less than 15 years. And this is for all those that are about to get married that need this information. They're on the threshold of getting into a relationship that they know will last the rest of their life. They need this so bad. All these high school students, they need to hear about this when it comes to the point of picking out a good wife or picking out a good husband. And that may very well be true. But let me just let you understand the fact that this is something for older couples just as well. And I'll tell you why. It wasn't too long ago that we had a call from a couple, a man that talked about how it was as a Christian, his wife was a Christian too, that she was in an affair for 40 years. And he didn't know it. He divorced her for fornication, adultery, and had found him another girl that he was going to, or woman, I should say, that he was going to marry, but that didn't take place. So even if a couple's been married for 40 years, and I remember an elder of her church one time who had difficulties in their marriage, and he and his wife were separated, and they put together a very good glow in front of everybody that I think is very important for you to understand, that there are Christians that are involved in these circumstances, deeply seated. And they may very well be people who are coming into a church building just like right now, and they're presenting to you a marriage mirage. They spit shine their marriage. Everything looks really good because they come in, they greet everybody, they talk to everybody pleasantly. They'll smile at you, they'll shake your hand, they'll talk to you about all the things that are going on in their life. But in reality, it's nothing like that. Their marriage is nowhere close to that. And it's not just the people that sit in the pew that come on just Sunday morning either. There are people that come all the time. They're elders, they're deacons, they're preachers, they're Bible class teachers, they're song leaders. They're all over the place. They're all over the place. So just don't believe that this is just unique, just to one segment of a certain group of the people and the populace of the church. It's affecting everybody. So don't let your marriage be one of those that just spit shine. But know this, the circumstances that exist in your marriage today are by your choice. You have found yourself in a position where your marriage is at the choice of which it is today. But I will also say this, where it goes tomorrow is also going to be by your choice. Where you're headed tomorrow will be by your choice. What it's going to be like 10 years from now will be your choice. What it's like 5 years, what it will be at the time of the death of your mate will be your choice. It's by your choice that all these things take place. No one forces this on you. No one puts you in a position that you're destined to this. And this is all there is to marriage. But please understand, this is by your choice. Well, I think it's important for you to understand that if it was given for you the opportunity to sit down and explain to somebody about marriage, what would you say? What would you tell them? What, you sit down and talk to another person that is about to get married or somebody that is, or just to talk about marriage in general in a Bible class, what would you say? How would you define this? How are you going to discuss this? Do you have any way to give to them the key ingredients to make marriage fulfilling, growing, and it be definitely blissful and fulfilling? I mean, you got all the ingredients there. What are you going to say? Some people describe their marriage as very tense, divided, hostile, angry, divided, and to the point that they're thinking, well, I just wish I had somebody could plug in something real quick and the lights would come on. We'd all be what we need to be. Well, let me just present to you something this morning from the book of Genesis chapter 2 that we present to all premarital couples and also some married couples just the same. That I think is very important. And that is looking at the blueprint that God placed in the very beginning. And I know we probably have gone through this many, many times, but this is the actual blueprint that you can find yourself meditating upon and understanding greatly and reviewing quite often to see, where did God put me? Where am I supposed to be? And you can praise God for this plan that He's put together, but the real praise of this is in the execution of it in your own life, in your own relationship, in your own marriage. Can it be done? Yes. Has it been done? Yes. Will it be done? Yes. And you know who's going to do it? You'll do it. You will do it. And this is not just another one of these marriage lessons either. Because as I get into this, there will be something that you will see. That every time we go through this in premarital counseling and marriage counseling, it's one of these things that I gain a greater appreciation and a richer understanding of why it is that God placed us in this relationship and gave us the opportunity to enjoy all the things that are in this. Therefore, it's very important that, number one, we will trust God in the blueprint that He's put in front of us. You trust that man that, as an architect that puts the blueprints on the dining room table and says, this is what your house will look like. All the pictures, the dimensions, the height, the width of it, everything, the length of it will be just like this when we get the right guys to do this. God says, this is what's going to happen. The blueprint's there when you get the right people doing the right things in this marriage. And they don't compete against each other. They complete each other when they're not distracted from all the other definitions that people have of marriage. They lay it down and they say, that looks pretty. That looks great. I want this. I need this. I want to buy this. How much does it cost? And God says, it costs your time and it costs your work. And it costs a submission to what it is that I want you to be. Therefore, you just can't automatically say, well, our house is going to look just like this. Our marriage is going to look just like this. It won't happen until, number one, you understand verse 18. Marriage made in the image of God, and the image of God in that marriage is where, number one, man's loneliness is not good. That's exactly what he states in verse 18. I will make a helpmate for him. Now that looks really interesting. Because this is not something that just covers the fact that man has no companion. There's no one there. Whether it's male or female or animal. It's not necessarily just the fact that there's a companion that he needs. A helpmeet that he needs. I asked couples in this, I said, who's the first person in that verse that realizes they need somebody? Who's the first person that realizes that? Is it man or is it God? And they'll definitely come across with the answer, it's God that sees this. Therefore, this idea of this loneliness that takes place is evident by God. Therefore, the idea of man not being not having somebody and not good, God sees it's not good. Man doesn't see that it's not good. Therefore, the very first key ingredient to the idea of marriage in the image of God is seeing your dependence upon God. 10 out of 10 couples that we've ever counseled have lacked the knowledge of the dependence upon God. They're dependent upon this man. They're dependent upon this woman to give me what I need. Because I married them, they said they're going to do this. I married him, he's going to do this. They're dependent upon this person. The dependence in this passage is upon God. What your relationship is should be based upon your dependence upon God, not your dependence upon the relationship that you have with your spouse. Now that's very important, don't get me wrong. But if you isolate yourself from God, you're going to automatically isolate yourself from your wife or from your husband. Maybe not necessarily automatically, but the tendency is going to be there. So therefore, have your dependence upon God. The loneliness here is taken care of by God. Therefore, the man needs to see his dependence upon God to make sure that he has what he needs. Because man cannot live without God. Therefore, the image that God has placed within man, there's also an image of God that's placed within his marriage. Number two, please understand, as he talks about in verse 21 to verse 23, the idea of the acceptance of what it is that man is given. In verse 21, God, Jehovah, caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man, and he slept, and he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh thereof. And the rib which Jehovah God had taken from the man made he a woman and brought her unto the woman. And the man said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh." There is not a richer, deeper sense of appreciation and acceptance of his mate than to use those words in the first part of verse 23. Other than to say what he says in calling her woman, giving her great honor by that name, he understands this is the one that God made for me. I'm accepting her just like he is. Look, just like she is. And I wonder, how's he looking at her? Oh, she's the right size. She's just what I always wanted. Brown hair. Blonde hair. Brown eyes. Blue eyes. 5'7". The thing about it is, he's accepted her before, number one, she's put on any clothes, before she's made him this great and wonderful casserole, before she's combed her hair, before she's washed his clothes, before she's done anything. This is not out of performance. He's accepted her. Okay, I take her because she likes me and I like her. We get along. She appreciates me and I appreciate her. None of these things are preliminary. None of those things are there. She accepts her just because of the fact that God made her. He unconditionally accepts her regardless of the performance. Weaknesses, strengths, and all. Everything's there. She didn't cook the thing. But she is the one that's custom made for him. And until a husband and until a wife begin to appreciate unconditionally, accept what God's placed in their, the person that God's placed in their life, then they never will find the true image of God in their marriage. God perfectly provided man exactly what it needed. Didn't regard the size, the color, anything about that. All the weaknesses and strengths were there. But let me just add this before we go to the next point, and that's this. If you as a husband, you as a wife, find yourself never come to the true point of accepting unconditionally this husband and this wife that God has placed within your life, and you said, "I do too," and you never come to the point of accepting him unconditionally, then you're casting a shadow upon what God has given to you in that gift. As if to say, "God, you messed up on this one. This didn't turn out right. This is not the one that I really anticipated." You will accept in part, or you will accept in whole. If you accept in part, then therefore you're going to only love in part. If you accept in whole, you will love in whole. And therefore, as a result, you will find yourself fulfilling the image of God in your marriage. And Diane and I comment on that a lot. Accepting God, accepting what God's given to each other in the person that we have. The third thing I think is very important in this is verse 24, and that is reflecting the image of God in marriage is just what he says in verse 24. Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother. Leaving. And we look at that and we first instinctively say that this idea is where this man leaves the family that he was born in, mom and dad, and he goes off, finds another woman, and brings her to be with him. And she accepts that invitation, that proposal, we say, and then she wants to be a part of another relationship with this man. And therefore, we say this man, this woman, they leave their family and they create home number three. Great as that is, there's something about that that needs to be understood very clearly. It's not just taking somebody physically out of something, a relationship that they were in, and bringing them into something totally new, and they establish something of their own. There's also some other things that need to be left too. I remember when I was preaching in Bartlett, Tennessee, and there was a couple that was there that had been married just a very short period of time. But she still had feelings, we would say, and affections for her previous boyfriend that she had in her later high school years, which became to be a very problem, big problem, to the point that she had an affair with him. The relationship to the past have to be left. Not just leave your mother and father, but leave all the relationship to the past. Some of you guys out there, you know what you're going to have to leave when you get married? Your hobbies, probably. You may have to leave an extra job, too. A gentleman I know that's preaching the gospel now, which preaching at two or three different places during the month before he got married. And he realized that even in the preaching of the gospel, he couldn't just go off and be all these different places and preaching all these different congregations. And he said, I had to narrow it down to one. Because I had another full-time job through the week. He was just preaching on the weekend for these other churches. In order that he developed the relationship that he needed with his wife, he had to cut back on all those things. So there are some things you have to leave. Jobs, hobbies, relationships of people that you found yourself physically, emotionally, socially attached to in order that you find yourself cleaving to this woman or this man. That you say, I do too. And I think that's very, very important to understand the vital aspect of that. That it's just not leaving a mother and a father. But let's just add this while we're talking about this idea of leaving father and mother. A man by the name of Dan Allender wrote a book called Intimate Allies where he said, 90% of the problems in marriage were from the failure to leave. Failure to leave mother and father. There's a lot of emotional connections with mom and dad. But then there needs to be the strings, as they say, that need to be cut so that we can develop the relationship with this husband or this wife, which may mean that you may need to move. Now, I know a lot of you parents don't like that idea for your child to move off. But I'll tell you, I'll be one of those for it. I tell a lot of couples, I say, here's what you need to do. You need to think that your marriage is just like a deserted island. And you and your husband, you and your wife get on that deserted island and there's nobody around. Nobody around. Therefore, if there are difficulties and conflicts that exist, what are you going to do? You're not going to run anywhere because you have no place to go. Only to the person that's on that island with you. Living close to home might be a good thing. But I'll tell you what, it's become to be a bad thing. Only if you understand how important this idea of leaving all becomes to your marriage. To the point that your mate doesn't get the back seat, they get the front seat. And they're right there navigating with you all through your marriage. But then there's something else that needs to be understood when we come down this idea of the blueprint that God has for marriage, and that is we want to make it last. In verse 24 of the book of Genesis chapter 2, he says, therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. The idea of cleaving is so important is so integral to our marriage. We adhere to each other. We're definitely glued. We're bonded to each other. It's a commitment that we know that's going to be binding. It's a covenant that's going to be standing there. It's going to be through the good and the bad, the well and the sick. It's going to be the adverse and prosperity, the disappointments and the strengths, all those things. It doesn't matter. It's just like Matthew 19:6 says. What God joined together, let not man put asunder. We know that this is going to be there. But yet, here's the key point about this. This is where, at this point of the cleaving, this is where you're going to execute what you promised. This is the period of accountability. Where you said, I love, I honor, I respect, I appreciate, through all those things, this is the accountability. This is where you fulfill those vows that you made to this man or to this woman. If you have trouble remembering those things, write them out. Memorize them. Even recite them to each other. That way you know what you said. That way you know what you're going to do. And the reason I say this is, even though we talk about marriage leaving and cleaving, this is no guarantee. As I stated to you a while ago about this couple that have been married for 40 years. There's no guarantees in this. And I'll tell you why. To get to 40 years and to 50 years and 60 years of marriage, I can't speak for those that are in that ballpark of their marriage yet, but I would sincerely believe that the ability to be there is only because they had enough energy to cleave one day at a time. Even though they may have promised we're going to do this until our death, it's a matter of they cleaving one day at a time. Now, when you add one day at a time, you've got weeks upon weeks and months upon months and years upon years. And then you've got this everlasting marriage that people would say. But you have only the energy to do it one day at a time. That way, you cleaving tomorrow is a lot easier than it was yesterday because you cleave today. And that way you become more one flesh, emotionally, spiritually, socially, mentally, physically. All because you do it one day at a time. For you never know what your marriage will face. And if I took a poll of the whole audience this morning, I would find at least one couple, at least one, that would never have thought and never would have planned that their marriage would have faced whatever it faced. But they vowed to it. It's like this man who somehow contracted aseptic meningitis, was in the hospital for several days, came out, and he knew nobody. He did not know his wife. He did not know his children. He did not know he had a job. He did not know how to walk. He did not know how to talk. He did not know how to eat. He knew nothing because of that aseptic meningitis. And his wife stayed with him through this whole process by which he was able to regain his strength to walk, to talk, to eat. And then through the process of pictures and memorization, he realized he was married and he did have children. For the next 15 years, his wife helped him do this. When he realized he came to the point that where he was at the end of the 15 years, he asked his wife, he asked her, he said, "Why did you do this?" And she said two things. "I love you, and I promised." This idea of cleaving goes much deeper than just to say, "I want to live with him, I want to live with her." But then understand this. In verse 25, this idea of openness and honesty is revealed in bringing about the image of God in marriage. When we talk about this text to couples, we say they were naked and the man and his wife were not ashamed. And the first thing that's pointed out probably is the intimacy of the sexual union. Definitely, that's definitely part of this. But let's just put this all together here and see how this works. If you take the richest of what's happened previously from verse 18 to verse 24, then you're going to see why verse 25 comes next. The way God put in His wisdom all these things together. We take couples and we bring them together in premarital counseling and ask them, what is there about him that you like? And what is there about her that you like? What is there about the thing that makes y'all click and get together and you want to get married? And she will say, well, he is so good looking and he is so nice to me and he's so kind. He appreciates me. He does these wonderful things to me. He opens the door. He does all these things. He gives me these gifts. He understands what I mean, what I'm talking about. He understands this and he likes this. And you ask her, he says, why is it that you want to, you know, why is it, ask him, why do you want to marry this girl? Well, she understands me and she appreciates me when I talk to her about this and all these kind of things. And I'm hearing all this and I'm thinking, yes, that's right. You're right, exactly right. I love this. I'm hearing all this. I'm thinking, bring it on, bring it on. I want to hear more of this stuff. And I'm telling them, I'm saying, here's what you're developing. You're developing an emotional intimacy with each other already to the point that you like each other, you want to do these things together. You have such a connection, intimacy from an emotional standpoint. What do you think is going to happen next? What's going to happen next? Verse 25 of the book of Genesis 2 is what's going to happen next. The man and his wife were naked and not ashamed. They're going to find themselves sexually together because they've already been emotionally connected to each other. No affair in this world ever becomes because of the fact that they just want to do a one-night stand thing. It's because they're emotionally connected to each other. They like the things together. They dislike the things together. They do things. All these things, this emotional intimacy is there. And as a result, they become to be open and honest. No skeletons in the closet. Nobody's hiding anything. We're all out front. He trusts me. I trust her. We don't criticize each other. We like each other. We're on the same page. And what do you think is going to happen next? They're going to physically find themselves together in marriage. Not before it. Because this is where we find ourselves. Having revealed everything, now the only thing left is to reveal our bodies. The true aspect of lovemaking in marriage is emotionally, with heart and soul and emotions and will, understanding each other. That, to me, is what really brings the purity and the sanctification and the true value of this blueprint that God's put together. To the point that verse 25 is just the culmination of everything. And they continue this with all honor, sacredness, and holiness because this is God's blueprint. And that's where you come to understand that what God's doing is giving you in marriage a reflection of His image. Because this is all about the glory of God in this. It's all about God's glory. It's not about you. It's not about me. It's about God. Let me just emphasize something, too, before we conclude the lesson of the value of this, particularly regarding Adam and Eve. One of the things I think is very important to learn about the marriage in the book of Genesis chapter 2 and chapter 3 is the idea that this has had a personal effect upon themselves. Verse 25 tells you that. It's had a personal effect upon them. But then when you get to chapter 3, verse 7, verse 8, it's also had a personal effect. That when Satan comes to them and tempts them and they yield to this temptation, then the eyes of them were open in verse 7 and they knew that they were naked and they sewed fig leaves together and they made themselves aprons. They heard the voice of Jehovah walking in the garden in the cool of the day and the man and his wife hid themselves from the presence of Jehovah God amongst the trees of the garden. In this text, it just tells you that there's been a personal effect of marriage upon them, the man and the woman. And we talked about in our Bible class, if there's trouble in marriage, it's because you let sin in there. And in this case, when sin developed in their marriage, what did it do? It shattered the trust. They're over here hiding. They're getting away from God, the one that they should be depending upon, to leave them. They're critical of each other. They may be angry of each other. They're ashamed. And all this intensity increases. They isolate. They're lonely. And next thing you know, they're out of the garden. They had a personal effect. Therefore, you can't say, you cannot say, my marriage has no impact on anybody. It does. It's on you. And the second point is, it has its effect upon society. The thing about it is, when you talk about this idea of its effect upon society, definitely what happened in Genesis chapter 3 brought death and sin to the world. Even Romans chapter 5 verse 12 talks about that. through the sin of Adam. Death is brought into the world. Every single person in this audience, including me, have had a marriage that's impacted them, it's affected them some way. Definitely we have. In this case, the responsibilities of labor, childbearing, submission, headship, working, all those things have come as a result of what they've done. And that's impacted society after society, generation after generation. Therefore, regardless of the circumstance of which you've been born in this world, and regardless of what marriage you saw, why you grew up, divorce, out of wedlock, two good parents, whatever the case may be, this has had its impact upon you, and you and your marriage will have impact on somebody. Your children, grandchildren, even the members of the church which you're a member of. Let me ask you this, pray tell me how in the world you came to the point of having elders if their marriage didn't impact you in your decision to appoint them as elders. Deacons the same. So therefore, marriages have a greater impact upon us than probably we really think. And elders in churches, wherever I've been, have understood how quick one marriage can ruin the whole church. But then, I give you hope. Just like God gave in Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, where it says, "And I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. He shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel." There's hope for man because of the sin that exists or existed at that point. And there's hope for every marriage. That regardless, and we tell couples, regardless of how bad you think it is now, and how hopeless it seems to be, there is hope for your marriage. It's just like John 3 verse 5 says, a man can be born again of the water and the Spirit. Just as that can happen, your marriage can be born again. You do not have to hold on to what you've got now. If all that involves sin and disappointment and frustration and division. But I will say this, it all begins with God. It all begins with God. But there is one thing that your marriage will need more than anything else, and that is your transformation, your change into being what He wants you to be for your spouse, and to be for God, to be for your family, to be for others what you need to be. God gives you that opportunity through what Jesus did. Jesus died and brings hope to a soul who's in sin by that soul repenting, that soul confessing of Jesus as the Son of God, by that soul being baptized in the water to rise up to walk in newness of life, and by that soul living faithfully and dedicated to the covenant that they have with Jesus and with God. That can be you, and that's one great key ingredient you can add to your marriage. Please do so as we stand and sing this song.